You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 217.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. You may have noticed that some episodes are a little bit tougher to do than others. I think this is one of them. When the war in Ukraine started, as some of you know, I had been to Ukraine in 2019. I was there to teach at the Lviv Data Science Summer School, and it's been very alarming. And so I, didn't know exactly how I was going to cover it. And I decided after, particularly after talking to Polina, which that episode was episode 215 that came out a week and a half ago, that I was just going to gather stories from people that I met in Ukraine about what they're going through. So, I put out the call on social media. I asked people to send things for me to read. I asked people to send in recordings, and we're just going to play them today. For those of you who come to this show for machine learning and AI, we will be getting back to that soon, starting next week for sure. And you'll hear more about what we're talking about next week at the end of the episode. But after this episode, I think we're going to have a string of artificial intelligence, machine learning, Bayesian inference related episodes, which should be a nice change of pace from what's been going on over the last few episodes. I just want to find some things I read from some people I met or interacted with there, and just hear what they have to say. So first of all, this is just going to be completely uncensored. I am not going to bleep out words or anything like that. People might be upset out there, but that's fine. A lot of Ukrainians are asking for military aid, and I understand that. I would probably be asking for the same thing if I were in their position. I'll let everyone speak in full and make their case. You let me know what you think. localmaxradio@gmail.com, maximum.locals.com. Personally, I am very reluctant to call for our politicians to do things like a no-fly zone, just because, this thing can get out of control. And then, what's happening in Ukraine can start to happen all over the world. And we really need to avoid that. And find some way to bring the world back from the brink. That said, I have no say over what our government does in the U.S. anyway. So aside from that, there are many places to give humanitarian aid. I have done so in one place in particular, which I'll talk about in the middle of the show, for this orphanage. I'm actually going to give more. It's I think it's supportukraine.org, supportukrainenow.org. Okay, so I'll remember to put that in the show notes page, localmaxradio.com/217. All right, so for those of you who wrote in, I apologize for not getting to everyone. I got way more submissions than I can handle, and I tried to focus on people that I've interacted with. Also, I'll try my best on names, particularly last names, and so I apologize for not pronouncing your names correctly. So first of all, let's talk to someone who was actually in my class, a student in my class on Bayesian thinking, Vita Vitalia Olinik. Once again, I apologize for the name. Vita is probably a good one. She's going to talk about how she moved to Kiev and is now back in Lviv and what that was like. So let's bring that up. Vita, you've reached the Local Maximum. Thank you so much for doing this today and for letting us know what's going on, at least what's going on for you. So it's my understanding that you moved to Kyiv very shortly before this all happened. So you just got there?
I was like living there for months, and I was already anxious to move there because, you know, the talks about war were very present in media since I think the end of the autumn. Like, everyone was very cautious. Right. And the funniest thing is I was actually very anxious it's going to start like any day. So the week before it actually started, I was like having a lot of sleepless nights, just scrolling through news and waiting for the invasion to start.
Right.
And funnily enough, the night it started, I actually decided, well, you can't go on like this forever, girl. You have got to get some sleep. And then woke up to the fucking siren. So I'm sorry for swearing.
Yeah, that's all right. This is going to be an uncensored episode. Did you grow up there? Is that where you grew up?
In Kyiv? No. I grew up in Lviv, but I was kind of planning on moving to Kyiv for a long time.
Right.
A lot of my friends live there, so...
So what made you decide to move there in February then, given, given what was going on?
You know, I was planning on doing that for a long time and kind of got the opportunity. And I was thinking, okay, this is too stupid. Like, we know about the amount of troops on our border. The whole world is talking about it. He can't be that stupid. Like, he can't actually do that. He's probably just threatening. It's not going to be a thing. Like, maybe a few conflicts like at the border, but not like the full-scale invasion. So I genuinely thought nothing would happen. Like, there was an anxiety, but it was like, I'm just stressing myself out. Nothing much.
Yeah. So
tensions.
What were those few weeks that you were in? I want to say when you were in Kyiv, when it was normal, but it obviously wasn't normal, but, essentially that was just moving in and getting to know your new neighborhood and surroundings for those first few weeks and then having to leave immediately.
Yeah, I kind of already knew my surroundings because I was very frequent guest in Kyiv. Like I told you, there were a lot of my friends, so I was living with my friends for a month, and it was just very normal. I mean, a lot of ads in the subway about joining the military and protecting your country. The whole, like, I don't know. It just, I remember Kyiv for my whole life as being like this very active, very buzzing, very lively city. And because the last couple of weeks before the war, it just, the center was relatively empty. Like, it was just in the air. It was heaviness. You sensed it, that people were trying to live their lives, but they were kind of afraid. And this whole thing just ran into the background of every conversation you had with friends. Like, hello, let's meet for a beer. Also, do you think there's going to be a war?
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, you got to have a few meetups before that all went down. It almost reminds me of those few weeks before COVID in New York, where obviously there wasn't a war, but you know, it was like all of a sudden, like, you'd remember everything you did in February, because in March onward, you know, there was like basically the entire world was shut down. So you woke up to the sirens. Was it in the middle of the night?
It was like in the morning I woke up, and for like a few mornings before that, like where I lived, there was a hospital nearby. So a lot of ambulances were going out, and every morning I would wake up and I was like, oh shit, this is air alarm. It started. But this time, ironically, I woke up and I thought, okay, Vita, you're just overthinking it. It's probably just another ambulance, but I'm going to check my messengers really soon. And I'm opening my phone and there are like tons, like dozens of messages like, are you alive? Do you know what's going on? Have you seen the news? It started.
So it's like, oh my god, it's happening, and it's like the unthinkable.
So I woke up and I walked to the window and I've seen a bunch of like tanks moving through the streets, and the first thought I had was my boyfriend was asleep. He was not woken up by this, and I thought, okay, I gotta wake up this person and tell them that there's a war going on. How do I do it?
Yeah, that's a little.
Yeah, so we woke up and I was panicking and I was just pacing the room and I was like, okay, what are we going to do? I don't know what to do. And my boyfriend was just weirdly calm and he was like, okay, let's make some breakfast, get dressed, and then just think about what we're going to do. One problem at a time.
That sounds like a good idea. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So that's essentially what we did. And we did not have like any transport to move out of the city. We had train tickets for the next day, but we kind of, you know, we were afraid that the trains were not going to like function soon and the whole city is going to be, you know, in shambles. So we were just frantically looking for a way to get out. And my manager from work actually contacted me with a colleague that was fleeing the city and had two spots in the car. So we just kind of packed, like, right now I'm in Lviv and all I have with me is just one hoodie, one t-shirt, and like one pair of jeans and maybe a few books.
So you got a ride out by car?
Yeah. It was like very weird because normally the trip from Kyiv to Lviv takes like 6 hours at most. And
I've done it on the train. That was actually a very nice train.
Yeah. So, and this time it was like 16, 17 hours, I think.
Right. Because, wow. It was traffic.
Yeah. Like, I remember us pulling to the end of the traffic and the navigator just says, estimated time in traffic, like 89 minutes. And we were like, oh shit.
Wow. Yeah. And you sit in traffic for, you know, I could imagine like, you know, someone from here trying to get to, I'm just trying to make the distances about equal DC, but it takes all day or just, you know, more than a day. It sounds like it took, were you in the car for all 16 hours?
Yeah, we were kind of afraid of walking out because there were reports of Russian troops shooting cars on the road. So I don't know if they were confirmed or not, but like, when this thing happens, you don't have the resources and the critical capacity to filter out the news. So you just hear it somewhere. The Russian troops are shooting the cars and you're like, okay, I just better not come out then.
Did you see any Russian troops or planes or anything on the way? Or was it just, did you see the Ukrainian army go in the opposite direction? Like what did you see?
Yeah, it was Ukrainian army. So there were the people we saw, those were our guys. Fortunately, I did not encounter any Russian troops. There were a few explosions in Kyiv this morning, just as we were leaving this area. So that got pretty scary, but, you know, we got out safe and without any dangerous encounters with the troops.
Yeah. So what's it like in Lviv right now? You said that, you know, you can't find an apartment. Where are you staying? What's the kind of atmosphere like over there?
It's actually kind of heavy, you know, the whole atmosphere, because a lot of people are obviously having a very bad PTSD and they are kind of shocked by what they had to live through. And naturally it makes them angry because, you know, I'm also angry at this whole situation. I could be living a peaceful, normal life right now. And then there are locals who are also angry because, you know, all those people coming to our city and taking our apartments and this whole rhetoric. So it's kind of tense and not very pleasant. Like a lot of people from Lviv, they see you on the streets and you kind of, you know, if they suspect that you're a refugee, you know, you're not going to be treated as well as the native citizen here. And yeah, it's very difficult to find apartments. A lot of landlords are spiking up the prices, so they're very unreasonable, and very little apartments left, so a lot of refugees can't really afford them if there are some.
All right, and so where are people staying then?
There are shelters organized in like schools and I know that my company that I work in arranged some refugee shelter in one of our offices. And those people who, like, there are a lot of people in train station, the railway station, a lot of them, they're like, I was there not so long ago. I was signing up for volunteering, did not do it yet, but there are, you know, people just sleeping on their bags and just kind of living there for a couple of weeks, especially, wow. You know, they're
Are you going to stay in Lviv or try to go somewhere else?
I think I'm going to stay. I don't really have any desire to leave the country. I'm still hoping it's going to be over soon. And I'm going to go home soon. So,
yeah. Hopefully. We should wrap up soon, but like, I just want to ask, like, have you heard from, do you have any friends who stayed back east in Kyiv or whatever other cities around, and what have you heard from them?
Yeah, I have a couple of friends. I don't know. I think they're at this point more calm about this whole situation than I am. Like, I am hearing about an airstrike and I'm writing them like, oh my gosh, are you okay? Are you fine? And they're like, yeah I'm just making tea, you know, reading a book, going to the shelter. Yeah, all is well. All is well.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Amazing. All right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing this with us. I really appreciate it. I don't know if you have anything else to say that you didn't get to say, let me know. And I know we're all, thinking about all you guys here in the US.
Yeah. Thanks. It means a lot to have the support. Like, actually, it actually feels like the whole world will support me. So that's good. That's reassuring.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time and have a nice day.
All right. So you're going to hear a lot of stories like this on, you know, what it's like going on. I could almost imagine, you know, going through that drive that takes so many hours full of traffic and then seeing the army, come back on the other way. That almost sounds surreal. The next clip comes from Luda Vigilio. She is in Connecticut, so my hometown of Connecticut, and I was actually referred to her by someone from Connecticut, so from Facebook. Let's read what she had to say. My full name is Lyudmila Vigilio. I am so sorry. I am originally from Ukraine, born and raised. I moved to the USA in 2010, now married and live here permanently. My whole family is in Ukraine, in the northeast of it. My city, Sumy, was one of the first cities attacked by Russia on February 24th and is still a hot spot. Sumy region is destroyed. Russians announced fake green corridors, but once people start leaving, Russians shoot their cars, they kick people out of their private house to the streets and invade their homes. I know someone who this happened to. My mother and 90-year-old grandmother who survived World War II and famine have to hide from airstrikes and stay in the bomb shelters. Finally, today, Sumy received first delivery of humanitarian aid. This makes me hopeful. On my end here in the USA, I started collecting money donations for my city. We shipped boxes of necessary medical help last week as humanitarian help. I actively spread information from reliable sources on social media and participated in meetings of Ukrainians in our towns. I spoke on TV News 12 Connecticut, showed my story yesterday. All this helps me feel somewhat useful, but also raises spirits of my friends and family back in Ukraine as they see they are not alone, but supported by us. Okay. Next, I'm going to play some audio from Kostya, who was part of the Data Science Summer Program. I'm not sure if he was actually in my class, but I got a chance to speak to him while I was there on his data science project and about his job. I think we also met up in Kyiv afterwards. So, all right, I'm going to play some audio from Kostya. It's about 5 minutes, and you're gonna hear what life was like for him when this war started.
Hello, Max. My story is that I woke up at 5 in the morning. My friend called me and he said that the war began. It was around like 8 days ago, and we were half prepared. We had food tank in the car, and we had some medical kits. So immediately we started to drive to the European Union border. It was like 12-14 hour drive, and then we stayed in the line there with the hope that we can cross the border. But then we understood that first it doesn't make sense, and second it would take us like 3 days to stay, and to I don't know for what basically. So it's like, it was super like weird feeling. So we came back to the Chernivtsi, which is near like 30 kilometers from the NATO border. Yeah, so it's like, and my family is on the east. They're currently on evacuation train, my sister and my mother, because father cannot take an evacuation train. He will stay in the east. They're currently on this train to Lviv to be evacuated to the Poland, because my company helps with that. And yeah, regarding like all of the working activities has stopped for me, because like currently we are doing like some data analysis, some developments in terms of spamming Russians to help them understand that this is like fucking propaganda. They are blind, and yeah, we are trying to do our best on this front. And yeah, I don't know what, if I should hope for that, because my relatives from Russia, they, when we are calling them, they don't understand, and they say that you have like Nazis in your government, and we will help you, but we don't need help. Like basically we speak the same language as them, and it's like super super weird feeling when your relatives, they get television and they don't understand you. They understand that it's like television propaganda, and it's like, it's heartbreaking. Yeah, so what I wanted you to understand, that it's like real war. I don't know, like the regular people are bombed, and not only the military ones, the fucking Russians, they don't understand why they're here, and because they, yeah, there is no information, like they don't understand why they're doing that. And yeah, so you can help by voting for NATO to close the sky, because currently it's the only front that we're bad at. We don't have enough planes and all of that. On the ground, our military does the great job. And yeah. So hope for the best. And please, if you can help anyhow, like donation to the hospitals, whatever. I don't know, like any help voting and being like vocal, or I don't know, help spreading the information. Thank you.
Okay, next we're going to go to Zhytomyr, which is a city to the west of Kyiv, about an hour west of Kyiv. I wasn't actually in Zhytomyr, but I kind of went, I went toward that direction to an area called Korestishiv and Radomyshl. Again, very sorry about the names, but anyway, I got in touch with this guy in Zhytomyr to ask about questions, because I was doing kind of a genealogical trip. So this was a rabbi in Jytomyr named Shlomo Wilhelm. And first of all, they run a Jewish orphanage from there in Jytomyr, northern Ukraine. And all of the children have been evacuated on buses to the Carpathian Mountains, which I believe is in Romania. And I'm sure there are tons of stories about, you know, people throughout Ukraine going to all of these kind of far-flung places. Maybe geographically, they're next to Ukraine, like Poland or Romania, but, you know, you could be kind of stuck in small towns or small areas in the middle of the mountains. And if you're running an orphanage, that's a lot of responsibility. And also, like, you know, for the kids, it's a crazy thing to happen to you. You know, if you're living in this situation, then all of a sudden you have to leave under those circumstances. Shlomo wrote on his Facebook page, I'm going to read a part of it, about something that a story that's going around, a fake story that's obviously disturbing him, and it disturbs me as well. So what he writes is this. Yesterday, on one media dump, which mistakenly considers itself to be a serious information resource, an article was published stating that the Jews of Jytomyr, a city in Ukraine, were forced to evacuate from the city due to pogroms and persecution by local nationalists, but not from the war. This fake was picked up by other sites, resulting in a flurry of calls to me. The callers asked with horror what was happening in Jytomyr. I will answer everyone, all Ukrainian Nazism, anti-Semitism, and persecution of Jews exists only in the sick imagination of the authors of this rubbish, false information. Why are these, quote, articles being written? This is more than obvious. There's a war going on in Ukraine. Russia attacked under an absolutely fictitious pretext of getting rid of imaginary Nazis, and in war, as you know, all means are good. Any false news that can cause or intensify conflict moods within Ukraine plays into the hands of Russia. So I thought that was interesting. And, you know, I heard those reports too. And, you know, I think there are a lot of people here who, you know, don't want to believe, you know, what's going on, or on the legitimate side, there's kind of, you want to see what Russia's point of view is, but you sort of don't want to face the facts. Some people don't want to face the facts that a lot of what Russia is saying about Ukraine is fake. And, you know, especially the idea of Ukraine being a Nazi state. And these guys, like the rabbis in Ukraine, they'd let us know. Trust me, they'd let us know if that was the problem. I'm aware of the I'm aware of the purported evidence that is going around social media about Ukraine being a fascist state or a Nazi state. And it's you know, as good propaganda is, it's way overblown isn't even an appropriate word for it. It's just blown all out of proportion. So, okay. I thought that was an important one to go over. Next, I want to hear from Nastia. Her full name is Anastasia, which I actually really like that, how that name sounds, Anastasia. So Nastia was also part of the data science summer program. I think that she was one of the, and I hope I get this wrong, but she was one of the like kind of volunteer helpers. I actually assume she was in college at the time, but now she said in this audio clip that she's 19. So she would have been what, 17, 16 at the time. Maybe they had high school helpers as well. Okay, so she is currently outside Ukraine in Berlin, although we see the same stories over and over again, people getting woken up at 5 in the morning. So we're going to hear what she hears from what's going on back home.
Hey, I'm Nastia. I'm 19 and currently in Berlin. In the past, I've been moving around quite a bit because of my university, but this semester in Berlin, it was very different for many reasons. Because of political tensions, we were going to a lot of protests. It almost became like a weekend tradition to go to Brandenburg Tor and demand actions from the US and from Europe. But I think everything changed on the 24th of February, That night we went to bed, but then wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning from the knock of my classmate on the door. And I still remember him shouting, like, "They're bombing Ukraine, call your parents, make sure they're okay." So we start, my roommate and I are Ukrainian, and we started texting our parents. Thank God mine were okay, they live closer to the west, but my roommate, she started crying because she called her mom, and her mom was in the basement hiding with her brother and grandmother because their city was being bombed. That night they bombed basically a lot of places with important military infrastructure, and it was just tough. The day, like, of course we didn't go to bed, we skipped the next class and went to the protest. I guess one of the hardest thing when you're living abroad and you see all of this happening to your country is that you still need to keep going. Like, I still have classes I need to visit, I still have some coding assignments I need to do, and it all feels so irrelevant and not important at the moment, but you still need to keep going. But yeah, it kind of, our lives and our priorities right now changed. We are trying to do our best to support our families and friends and going to the protests and again demanding action from Europe and from US and showing that, hey, we've told you that this is what's gonna happen, but he didn't listen to us, so please now, please listen. We are trying to help the people, refugees who are coming currently to Berlin. We are helping with humanitarian aid and, like, just some military supplies that are being collected here and sent to Ukraine. And in general, I guess it's been very different for all of us. Like, I feel like I'm feel less of the impact because my family is relatively safe, they're closer to the border, but many of my friends, they have their, like, moms and dads just going to the army, and now they're collecting funds to at least make sure they have bulletproof vests and helmets for them. As for my family, I guess I'm just worried because they live close to an important military object, and my house doesn't have a proper functioning basement, so when they're, my family is at the apartment building, all they can do is go to the hallway. And looking at the photos from Kharkiv, for example, I'm not quite sure how safe is that. And in case, God forbid, something happens, I'm not quite sure what, how safe that would be. So every day we just wake up, read the news, and even though we hate reading the news, but we still read the news because we're looking at trying to see whether our cities were bombed or not and whether we are safe. So I guess that's just like a little summary of how my life personally has been so far. And yeah, I guess if there is any way you guys would be willing to help, the best way would be to reach out to your officials and demand them to force NATO and the world to close the sky above Ukraine, because I do understand that no one wants World War II, but the only way we can stop it is that with the war that is already going on. So if you could reach out or make donations, that would be very appreciated. Thank you for listening to my story.
Okay, finally, I'm going to read this submission from Zhenia, which starts with that letter that which is the ZH, which I really I wish I it's embarrassing because I don't know the Cyrillic alphabet, so I have to ask. But let's see. Let me read this, and this is our last submission, and then we'll wrap it up from here. This is from Zhenia. I was in Kyiv when the invasion started. I woke up at 5 a.m. from the sound of rockets hitting my city, immediately texted my friend whose fiance serves in the military and who lives near some military infrastructure to come to my place because she was at risk. That same day, we tried to get to the train station, but couldn't because the metro was stopped and air raid alerts started going in. The avenue leading out of the city was completely blocked, and people were walking along with children and backpacks, quite a desperate sight. We managed to get out of Kyiv the next day by walking to the train station and trying our luck with a couple of trains in the western direction. Couldn't get into any of them, so we took a suburban train, then another train to Venezia. I'll try Venezia. I'll go with that. Stayed the night at some kind people's place who didn't know us, but helped because that's what everyone would do. Next day, we got on the train to Lviv, which thankfully wasn't crowded, so we can sit for the first time. I arrived in Lviv and not to my hometown of Varash in Rivne region, which I believe is also in the west, mostly because I wanted to help someone else volunteer and volunteer whenever I could. There are all sorts of amazing initiatives, from gathering humanitarian aid to housing refugees to equipping the newly made soldiers. My hometown is a satellite of a nuclear power plant, and they observed with grief how Chernobyl Zone and Zaporizhia NPP were captured. Those were nuclear power plants. There is this sort of determination in everyone I talk to that we should fight till the end. So do my parents, who help fortify the town and gather all necessary stuff for the military. It still was heartbreaking to hear from them this sort of just-in-case advice about how I should take care of my siblings and cousins. I stay in Lviv mostly to help within my company, which I used to do data science stuff for. It's a retail giant, and the load increased, so they all accepted all office personnel and warehouses and stores. These days have been the worst to many Ukrainians, both here and abroad, and support that we found within society and internationally keeps us going. We forgot all quarrels and everyone working toward the same goal to the extent it's hard to find a place to volunteer as there are too many candidates. So, yeah, once again, someone who does data science from the data science community, there are a lot of them out there, which I think is no shock. You know, there's a lot of engineers and scientists from that part of the world. So those are just some stories from Ukraine, just so we can get a little bit of sense of what's going on there and what the people there are thinking, at least the people in my circles. Obviously, this is not the whole story, so don't beat me up on that. And these are personal stories. This is not, a whole geopolitical analysis, which I'm not equipped to give. But I hope this gives you a sense of what's going on that you just can't get from, I think, talking heads here in the United States. I don't use talking heads in a pejorative sense. Maybe just say, like, okay, commentators here in the United States, or people talking here in the United States who don't really know a lot about the country. So I thought that was helpful. I thought it was good to hear. Once again, maybe not the easiest one to listen to. Although I thought it was fascinating, and I almost, hearing some of these stories, I can almost feel what it's like being there. It's pretty unbelievable what's going on. So next week we'll try to get back to some sense of normalcy. I'll try to get back to machine learning, and I'm going to talk about this paper that I wrote and I have published, and I'll have it published on my website by then, and hopefully it will be out from Archive by then, on bias correction in supervised machine learning. I've been working on this paper for a long time. It cites a patent of which I'm the primary inventor and one of the five inventors on Foursquare on our attribution project. But I think the point that I'm making in the paper is how to do bias correction if you have a bias data set, which is broadly applicable to so many areas of machine learning, data science, Bayesian inference, that I think this is an important paper. I'm happy with how it turned out. It was just a lot harder to get there than I thought. And so Aaron interviewed me on that. So I will play that next week. So I will look forward to that. I look forward to getting that out. We'll get some videos out on that. And with that, I think we're going to wrap up. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support the Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.